Hi, everyone. You are listening to Pints and Pairings. I am Curtis Taylor, also known as Hop Ed Said.
And I'm Jason Hendrick, a.k.a. The Hungry Man from Everybody's Hungry.
Wow, that sounded so much smoother the second time. I don't know what's happening. I know. We are discussing in this episode BJCP category number 5, which is also known as Box. And if you want to know more about BJCP, you can go to bjcp.org, and that stands for Beer Judge Certification Program.
Which you've been through.
I have. And as you go through, when you go to the website, you can see style profiles, which will tell you what you should expect in aroma, flavor components, what it needs to look like. It'll also give you samples so that you look through commercial examples of what we're drinking here for this episode, and you can go to your favorite beer store and go pick it up.
It's a wealth of knowledge. It also gives you, you know, some of those temperatures that they should be served at. And for those of you that are really trying to understand the beers you're drinking more thoroughly, go there and get some great info.
Right.
Or tune in to us. We're going to be going through all 23 styles.
And you, if you want to find out more about us, you can go to the Pints and Pairings page on hopheadsaid.com. Underneath those, whenever I post our episodes, I always give the links and some other descriptions to the things that we've been talking about. So whether it's videos or it's even more in-depth, specific sorts of food pairings as we go through. I add those in there so that you can look through those kind of as a quick reference guide.
Yeah, we're not the all-embodying authority on any of these pairings, so we want your feedback too. Send us some ideas of what kind of food you're pairing with these different styles of beers. We're always learning from the listeners.
Right, and you can send an email to me at curtistaylor@hopheadsaid.com.
Or jason@everybodyshungry.org.
And then,
but without further ado,
let's get to the box.
I'm excited about
it. I have one of my favorites here, the Polliner Salvator, and this is considered a Doppelbock, which means that it is a higher proof alcohol.
Okay.
So the ABV is higher, I should say. Not proof, because we're not getting up quite that high yet, but what's interesting about a Bock is it's more of a strength indicator than it is what the beer is. So you can expect to find in Bock rich caramely flavors, real nice body, but a Bock has to come in at least 6.5%. So leave it to the Germans to put together some guidelines that say, all right, if you're going to brew a rich, tasty beer and it's only at 5%, it can't be called a Bock. It can only be called a Bock when it gets to 6.5%.
And I'm pouring a nice sniffer amount for us to work through. We got some great goblets here. We talk about color and aroma. We're going to be getting, let's do it on your side. You got better lighting over there. But we want to talk about color, the box, a beautiful kind of ambery orange. Especially in the goblets, it dissipates a little bit on the side in terms of the color and gives a little bit of a pale yellowish complexity, but beautiful color.
Mm-hmm. And so on the Doppelbock side, we're talking about a beer that starts at 7%, generally 7.5% and higher. So if you find a Weizenbock, which is a wheat beer, and it says Weizenbock, you know that it's at least 6.5%. If you find a Weizen Doppelbock, then you know that it's coming in at 7.5%. So keep that in mind. These are not beers for the faint at heart by any means. These are full-flavored, full-bodied beers, and they pack a powerful punch. So if you sit down with a 20-ounce beer like what we have here and drink all of this, and can you take a look at the bottle? I can't remember which one, how much, what the ABV is on the Salvator. But it's
7.9%.
So if you sit down and drink, you know, all 16 ounces of an 8% beer,
you might have a party of one.
Yeah, you'll be feeling it.
I'm excited, though. This is like candy in a glass. When I look at the color versus the aroma, I think they match up. There's some caramely, almost butterscotch kind of notes right away. And obviously that's coming from the malt that we have in the grain bill, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, one of the great things about German beers, and even a liability for them, is that the only thing for it to be classified a beer if it comes out of Germany, it can only have these four things in it: water, hops, malt, and yeast, and that's it. So whereas Americans and Belgians, we can throw whatever it is that we want to, and the rest of the world, whatever we want to, into it and call it a beer, you can't do that in Germany. So what did they do to get the sweetness? Well, these beers have a really long boil.
Okay.
And so that helps to caramelize a lot of the malt flavors in it, or the sugars that are in the beer.
Can they play
or
with
in
the percentages of those grains, even though they have to stick with the four ingredients? Can they play with the percentage
there? Oh, yeah, definitely. Right. Yeah, they figured out how to use yeast to add spices. They figured out how to use grains to add sweetness or dryness, whatever it is. So those are the limitations that they have, but they've been able to master this whole range of beer styles just by using those techniques.
This could be a great pairing beer too. I wouldn't consider this a beach summer kind of day type of beer. There's a little bit of the heat and the alcohol in the back of the throat, so you can know that it's 7.9% right away, but it's got a little remnant or a familiarity for me to scotch, you know, especially in the back of the palate as it goes down in a pleasing way. There's a peatiness a little bit, and again, that kind of malty caramely component that should go great with food.
Yeah, so you've got these melanoidins in there, which is
melanoidins. Wasn't that a Nintendo game?
Yeah, and you had to jump, and then you went into a tunnel or something. And these plants, I don't know what happened with it, but a melanoidin is this flavor where you have these sugars that are continually boiled and caramelized and just over and over and over. So when you're talking about butterscotch or caramel flavors, when you're talking about peatiness, there's a little bit of one of the things that you shouldn't have in here though is any kind of roasty flavors. So if you're getting a coffee note, if you're getting a burnt sugar note at all, that's considered a defect in this beer, in this style. But the melanoidins, that kind of thing is the same thing that happens when you put in a toast, or when you put in bread in a toaster, it browns. When you put meat on the grill, those are the same things that are happening on those pieces, the food items. And so it just goes naturally that a beer that has those flavors in it is going to pair well with foods that have been prepared in the same way.
Sure. There's a lovely spice in here too. I mean, almost speaks to like a cumin or a... not quite cinnamon, because I think cinnamon offers a sweetness component too, but there's definitely a nice spice and an earthiness in this beer that I'm really excited about.
And the spices come from two different areas too. One is the hops that are used, these noble hops again that we've talked about before, herbal kinds of flavors, sometimes a little peppery. But then also the alcohol content is another part of this beer, another component of the beer that helps to balance it, because it is a very sweet beer. And if you didn't have the alcohol heat spiciness to kind of break that down, it would be way too sweet.
And most definitely. I mean, we're getting a savoriness out of this, but there is that underlying sweetness that you can't deny. You know, so one of the things I was thinking about while I'm sitting here drinking this, and I actually partnered it with another beer style we talked about on the website, but I could see this with like a flan or a custard to highlight some of the sweetness, you know, really complement the sweetness, but also contrast the spiciness. You know, a little bit of caramelized syrup at the bottom of a flan would be fantastic with this.
I think so. Especially when you have a sweeter beer like this, the first step you want to look at when you're considering food pairings is on the dessert sides. There, you've got this residual sweetness in this beer that will pair well with anything that is sweet on, you know, any other dessert that has a sweet. And then you're talking a flan, which has this caramelized brown sugar. Flan's the caramelized brown sugar on top. So you've got these similar resonating flavors, which are just elevating each other up, you know, in their intensity. And then you've got the alcohol in this beer, which helps to kind of cleanse the palate on the backside.
Not to mention open you up socially, kind of get you a little more relaxed. You know, another thing that I'm thinking about, because I'm a meat eater. I love desserts, but I usually don't make it to the dessert phase of dinner because I'm so into my dish that I want to finish that and I walk away a little over full. But you go with a rich and even slightly gamey, fatty, buttery kind of poultry or something like duck. Mm-hmm. But I think it would go great with this too. There's a natural sweetness, again, with the fatty darkness of the duck meat, or a crispy duck. You know, if you want to go that route, you end up with a sweet glaze and a crispy skin. Mm-hmm. I think it would really set this apart.
Well, and another thing that you that we overlook maybe a little bit too is going with a traditional cuisine. And you think about German cuisine, traditional German cuisine, you're talking game, you're talking duck, you're talking
all kinds of ground venison, sausages with right. unique meats and seasonings.
Right. So, you know, these beers weren't created in a vacuum. And they were able to they learned how to pair them with their with the foods sure. and the cuisine around. So whenever you start to look at a food pairing, one of the best places to start is just whatever the traditional cuisine is, and you can go from there.
Throw on your lederhosen, get yourself some kraut, a little sauerkraut to cut through the different flavor notes, and a nice rich fatty sausage.
Right. And then looking at beers and the main rule of pairing beers is matching intensities.
Yeah.
And so this is a beer that you're not going to pair with your salad. This isn't going to be a beer that you pair with white meat, whatever it is, because this beer has so much flavor that if you decide to go that route, you're not going to be able to taste the food.
Yeah. But, you know, we talked about fruit before too, and not overlooking the beauty of nice fresh fruit with a beer. And you could grill up some fruit with, you know, marinate it with a little like balsamic glaze and then sear it on the grill to get some of that toasty caramelization would partner with this nicely. And that way, again, you're not looking at the crisp freshness that's going to get overpowered and those light, you know, almost watery notes of fruit and lettuce and that you're going to overpower with this beer, but you're still getting some of that crisp fresh, especially moving into summer right now. You're not in California. We're a little spoiled with our produce, but don't overlook it.
Well, then also looking at serving size, because we've talked about how potent this beer is. This is a beer that I'm actually kind of surprised that it, well, I'm surprised that it comes in such a large bottle. So we did, I bought a single serving size of this, which is 1 pint, 9 fluid ounces, which is like 16 ounces somewhere in there.
But you know with Americans, bigger is perceived as better. We even our SUVs grew to a tank size status. So we well, probably push for that with the market.
It possibly could from, you know, in influencing European marketing. But this is, we're drinking these out of a snifter just because we want to taste it, and it allows us the room to swish and breathe in the aromas and take in the depths, the different colors that you can see through the beer. But this is going to be a beer that you want to make sure that you're not serving in a liter stein.
Exactly.
You don't want this in a 24-ounce glass.
No ceramic boots.
Nothing like that. Looking at a Pilsner, an 8-ounce or a 12-ounce glass, a snifter would be perfect. You can sit and drink this and enjoy this for a while.
And you talked about the swishing. And one of the things with a lot of beverages, especially beer and wine, the swish is key. You want to add some oxygen in there, just like humans. Needing oxygen to live and be their best selves, a beer needs a little bit of oxygen to open up some of those organic compounds and some of those aromatics. So
yes, it
make
does.
Sure you swirl and swish.
Give it a swirl. Also serving.
And in Australia, it swirls the opposite direction. Just remember that.
just remember, depending on which, if you're left-handed or right-handed, I guess. But the other thing is the serving temperature. Now, this was in the fridge. I took it out before we started so that it had a chance to warm up. We poured a small amount in it. It warms up faster. These beers are not – this is not the Pilsner style. This is not a 38-degree, a 40-degree, or even a 42-degree beer. This is a 45- to 50-degree beer.
Now, if we're in Germany drinking this, most of their beers are served almost room temperature anyway, right, by default?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say room temp. I'd say cellar temp.
Okay.
And – So that drops it down, you know, you're talking 15 or 20 degrees depending on where they're at. So serving it out somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 degrees or 50 degrees, which seems to somebody in the United States, especially when I first started out, I wouldn't have wanted a 45-degree beer or a 50-degree beer. Now, if that's what the serving temp is or that's what it calls for, then that's what I like to try and hit.
How strict are you with that when in your own home? Are you really kind of monitoring those temps? So you put it in the fridge, you let it warm up for 20 minutes when you take it out and then pour it?
Generally, I'll take it out just a little bit beforehand. It doesn't take long for a bottle to warm itself. So, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, depending on how cold, where it came out of. But when I'm pouring it and enjoying the beer, I know that it's going to warm up. So maybe my first sips are going to be a little too cold, but I'm not chugging this beer, sure, so that I know that towards the end I'm going to be getting a lot of different flavor components as well. So, but like my kegerator, my home kegerator is set at about 40 degrees, and by the time I get to the bottom of that glass, it could easily have warmed up to 50 degrees throughout that session. So something else to think about with this beer also is there's some different styles. There's a Maibach, which are really nice. They're lighter, generally on the blonde kind of side, but they're also kind of classified as a Helles Black, and Helles means light, so it's this light color.
So in order, are we looking at the Maibach and then the Weissenbach?
So on the box side, the Maibach is first, and generally it's a little lower alcohol, but it's still at the 6%. Then you've got just your straight out Bach, which is at 6.5% again. But this one is, the difference between the two is the Maibachs are a little lighter flavor. They're not as heavy as what a regular Bach is. And they were brewed to be served in May. So that's what the term Mai is, Maibach. And so they wanted those beers to come out, be crisp and refreshing, getting ready for the summertime kind of work that was happening.
Probably for, you know, the harvest as well. I mean, a lot of agriculture in Germany also. I'm sure the farmers are wanting to, you know, quenching, refreshing drink while they're out working in the field, so it makes sense in the Maytime.
Right, and a little lighter too, so you don't feel like you need to take a nap. Like if we finish
walking around bloated on the tractor.
Well, and if we finish this beer, we'd feel like we needed a nap. So then you've got the traditional Bock, the Doppelbock, which what we have right here. Then you get to something really crazy called the Eisbock, and the Eisbock is a beer that's been frozen, and they shave off, or they collect the ice. That
which is essentially water.
Which is the water. So then what's left is this incredibly rich, highly alcoholic beer. So you can raise the alcohol content by freezing a beer.
And that's concentrating some of the flavors too, right? Are we going to be looking at more of a toffee note and more of a richness? Or is it still pretty consistent with the Doppelbock flavor profile?
It would be, think of a Doppelbock and then, you know, take it to the nth degree. You know, so these are super, super rich, malty flavors, this caramel notes. It's going to be really, really sweet. And because when you're freezing this, when you pull the water out, everything else stays there. It's kind of like a distillation. You're just pulling the water out. So sure, all the flavor components all stay there, and they just get concentrated. And so you're talking toasted qualities, caramel, some chocolate maybe, just a
what,
little
what
bit.
What are your thoughts on, well, first of all, do we have Eisbock around us?
You could find, there would probably be some Eisbocks there. If you've got a well-stocked beer store that you're going to, you'll probably be able to find it. This time of year, maybe not.
Okay.
But just because they know that they're not going to sell very well.
So my follow-up to that is, if we can get our hands on some Eisbock, what are your thoughts on adding it into an ice cream blend? So we take, like, making our own ice cream. We get some cream, we get some, maybe a little cinnamon, some seasoning, mm-hmm, put in the ice box and try to turn that into an ice cream.
Well, I think it would be delicious with an ice cream, of a nice vanilla ice cream. One of the things that you want to make sure that you do, though, is you would want to open that bottle a day or two before you do that. And what that will end up doing is letting the carbonation,
okay,
release out to an atmospheric pressure, so when you pour that into the ice cream, you don't get a, like, a root beer float, yeah, kind of reaction.
But what about an Eisbock float?
Oh, I am not opposed to any kind of beer float. There are some that go very, very well. I have never tried an Eisbock float. I've had Imperial Stout floats. I've had, well, maybe it's just been Imperial
Stout. You know, I
like
to get outside the box, though. My gears sometimes turn at a different rate than a lot of other people, so.
Well, I think you're onto something with an Eisbock float, maybe even a Doppelbock float.
We need to
too.
Talk to Joby and have him do a little flight of floats.
A flight of floats. I like that. A flight of floats. So this has been
BJCP number 5.
I guess so. Yeah, I'm looking at it. It's hard to think that we've only done 5 so far. We've had a heavy day already, catching up on some bonus material, I guess you could say, for Pints and Pairings.
And it's not going to cost you anything else to listen to that bonus material. So go to iTunes, download our podcast.
Right. Like, go to Facebook, go ahead and give Hop Etc. a like. Especially go to Everybody's Hungry's Facebook page, give them a like. Between the two of us, you're going to find out when the new episode.
Yeah, we're going to keep you up to date, and it's going to be a fun journey. We hope you keep tuning in and following this journey with us. We're going through all 23 styles of the BJCP recognized beer styles. We're on number 5 box. We're going to be moving into number 6.
Right, and not only are we hitting all 23, but we're going to break some of those up too. And so there'll be bonus episodes throughout.
We hope you're going to be family by the end of this journey.
You will be, definitely. You'll either love us or hate us.
And I'm okay with either one.
Okay, all right. Just so that we know.
Where we stand.
Yeah, just so we know what our fans think of us. Anyway.
And on that note, make sure you send us feedback. Again, hopheadsaid.com, everybodyshungry.org. Give us some feedback. Leave it on our Facebook pages. We want to know what the listeners and the viewers are thinking of the show.
Definitely. All right, so this has been Pints and Pairings, and I am Curtis Taylor, also known as Hop Etc.
And I'm Jason Hendrick, a.k.a. The Hungry Man from Everybody's Hungry.
And we want to remind you to eat, drink, be hoppy.
We'll see you at the next pour.
Cheers.
Cheers.